Okay, guys, so the next thing I want to get into is really that ongoing fight between Xbox and PlayStation. So I've kind of titled this The Looming Threat of Xbox: What's Sony's Plan? So let's set the scene a little bit, okay? So clearly, Game Pass casts a massive shadow over gaming, over PlayStation, mostly everything. But what are the numbers? So the current state of play in terms of console sales as of March 2022, we're talking about 18.76 million PS5 sold versus Xbox Series X and S 12.81 million. So I was kind of thinking, like, is 2022 the launch pad for more Xbox? Yeah, possibly, right? I mean, because it's doing much better than it has in the previous generation and maybe ever. Yeah. So, what we're seeing is that from January to February in 2021, the PS5 actually sold over 500,000 more units than the Xbox Series X and S. But January to February 2022, PS5 has sold 1.11 million units, whereas the Xbox Series X and S has sold 1.02 million units. So it's kind of converging, it's getting closer.
Yeah, were those UK stats or was it like a global stats?
I believe those are global, actually. Yeah, they're global
will be
stats.
global. The thing is, there's other factors as well, right? There's supply chain constraints in terms of building the components. Also, the fact that Xbox has a cheaper console with cheaper parts. I would be interested to know how much of the Xbox numbers are broken by the are made up of the Series S model, which boost the numbers. But even stepping back from that, I think it's very interesting how Xbox have done pretty well in terms of units sold, considering they haven't really had that many banging first party games come out. I think the back catalogue is quite deep on Game Pass, which has probably helped. And interesting to see how they'll do this year, given they've had a couple of big games that have been pushed to 2023. But they've done on the surface, they've done pretty well compared to the previous generations and keeping up.
Correct. And really, you might say that Game Pass is their big banging first party product. Do they need those exclusives, with a service like that? But it's interesting. It's interesting information. I mean, Xbox Series X and S selling better than Xbox 360 in the same kind of like time window. And Xbox X and S has outsold PS5 in Japan for the first time in almost a decade. And I think this happened, I think, this month. Yeah.
What's the catalyst for that though? I because there's no Japanese game, so it
It must
has
be
to be
supply. Must be
supply
supply.
exactly, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, potentially. The other assumption is that, Japanese gamers just want to play Japanese games. But like, that's not necessarily, the whole truth,
It's
right?
true, yeah.
I'm also guessing that Japan like their small compact products. And I think the Xbox, Series S kind of represents that.
Well, yeah, especially in comparison to the PS5.
Yeah, and the Xbox, Series X, big units. Yeah. What we can say now is that we know for sure PlayStation 5 is selling worse than the PS4 during the same time window, but it started better, and it's still close. But the numbers don't lie. It's doing worse, and we actually don't have right now information regarding the split between Xbox Series X and S sales or PS5 disc or discless. I don't think that information's widely available at the moment. Okay.
And just to be clear, these numbers are actual units sold to the customer versus
Sell through.
shipped to the
Yeah.
retailer stores. And we know most of them sell out in retail stores anyway.
Yeah. They sell through. I don't actually think Sony kind of deliver numbers in any other way. I don't think they've done that for a while. Still impressive numbers, supply constraint or not, issues or not. But there's that looming threat of Xbox. They're very close. Breathing down Sony's neck.
Well, in terms of a long-term play, I mean, if you think about, as you said, Game Pass being their main product, once you're on there, you're going to be hooked. It's the same as having a Netflix, right? To leave will be very, very hard.
Oh, people are cancelling subscriptions.
They are starting to now.
Yeah, we'll get into that. You know, I know where this is leading. We'll get into that. You know, we can say it certainly at the start of the year. You know, the outlook for Xbox looking pretty good. They're not a punch bag. You know, this generation, no way. What can we really kind of like say about the current gen? Yeah, well, really, so far it's been about cross gen plus services, and really Xbox has had kind of Halo and Forza release in the last year, 2021 Q4, both games cross gen. PlayStation had Horizon and Gran Turismo in, I think it was Q1 2022, again cross gen. We know supply issues persist, though it can be said that getting an Xbox is a little easier, or has been a little easier. Yep. Game Pass has 25 million subscribers as of Jan 2022. PS Plus has 48 million subscribers as of December 2021. Yeah. Now, Microsoft reports that Xbox had a record Q1 2022 in earnings.
What, in terms of Game Pass?
In terms of the Xbox business, Al. The Xbox business in its entirety. Whereas Sony's recording the second largest quarterly revenue for PlayStation during the holiday period, 2021. That was $7.15 billion in that, I guess, the quarter. And that's basically higher than any other platform holder. And I just kind of said, ever. Yeah.
It's interesting how PlayStation have kept the PS Plus brand in terms of their Game Pass. They can say the numbers are high. Because I still don't think they're gonna have the same translation of people to the higher tiers, that which are closer to Game Pass, but nowhere near Game Pass, because they don't have the first party or day one. But
yeah, it's not that hook of a day on date kind of
But it does actually reinforce what you're saying, that, you know, Xbox is breathing down Sony's neck now. It really is.
And I just thought that we should give special consideration that, you know, there's about 100 million Xbox Gold subscribers. How, I don't know. But those are the figures I've seen, yeah. It's also worthy to note that PS4, Xbox One, still being sold. And we're still in this cross-gen phase. You know, we haven't left it. And it'll probably go on for a little bit longer because of the issues that, you know, we're having.
So it's a question on the Xbox Gold subscribers. Is that mostly console numbers, or does that have a bit of PC as well?
I would have thought it had to have some PC in there, but I can't remember Xbox Gold for PC.
Yeah, I think it had some level of Windows stuff on it, Xbox Gold, but that must predominantly be for the standard Xbox.
Could be people who have got some, you know, legacy Xbox consoles, and I guess with Game Pass also, Xbox Gold comes with the higher tier, you know, comes with Games Pass, so those numbers are factored in there as well. It's still a number. Right, that's okay. A big number.
It's a massive number. It's interesting because there's a new European regulation where you can't just let customers persist on a subscription if they're not using it. You have to give them a warning that you're going to cut them off within 30 days if they've not been active, and then actually cut them off and stop payments.
Intriguing.
I don't know when that's coming into an effect.
It's in effect already, soon, so. because Xbox...
Oh, is it? Okay, yeah.
They've already kind of remediated that, and then PlayStation did it. So that's already happened.
Right, okay, there you go. So these numbers are going to change then, aren't they? Let's see. So the playing field... indeed,
but, you know, it's interesting. It is very interesting. And I will say, as a last point, let's not forget, currently, the Nintendo Switch is still the best-selling current-gen console. Don't forget that, you Xbox and PlayStation fanboys.
it's last-gen
whenever Nintendo decide to refresh their tech, you know? It's like, this is their current-gen, you know what I mean? Until they decide to basically move over. So, with all that said, with kind of Xbox kind of really breathing down Sony's neck, you know, how we want to consume games kind of really changing, and really kind of, you know, Xbox and Microsoft really changing the kind of like playing field. Does Sony have a plan? Because Xbox has one. They've got one, right? So far, what's their plan? Well, we've got a new version of PS Plus that will launch in June. And it's being kind of rolled out across different regions. And I think it's end of May, region by region. I don't think we're even going to get it in the US or the UK first. Confusingly, there are three membership options. PS Plus Essential, which is current day PS Plus, PS Plus Extra, and PS Plus Premium. And running down these things, PS Plus Essential, same as PS Plus current day, so nothing much to kind of talk on there, but you know, you get your two free monthly game downloads and exclusive discounts, cloud saves, and online multiplayer access. PlayStation Plus Extra provides all the benefits of the Essential tier and adds a catalogue of up to 400 games, mostly on PS4 and PS5. And those games will rotate as well. That's been basically announced. So not really that much different from I would say, Game Pass. So what they've announced so far is, you know, Death Stranding, God of War, Mortal Kombat 11, Returnal, and the Spider-Man games. And there's more, actually. They recently kind of updated PlayStation blog to list out, you know, many more games that's going to be as part of the service. Not the entire list, but I think they talked about between 50 to 100 games. Yeah, they just outlined them. Now, PS Plus Premium provides, again, all the benefits of Essential, Extra, plus adds 340 additional games, including PS3 games via cloud streaming, a catalogue of classic games available in both streaming and download options for PlayStation, PS2 and PSP, cloud streaming access for PlayStation, PS2, PSP and PS4 games. And they've also said that PS Now has been, or I should say their streaming service has been expanded across more countries, which I found quite strange. You can stream these games on PS4 or PS5 and PC. And there's also that time limited trials service that we've kind of talked about before. So effectively, customers can try before they buy. And in to a degree, Sony have almost mandated this. It's for games that cost $34.99 and above. And they've got to offer the trial within 3 months of release. And you know, back in the day, this was discussed by kind of Trip Hawkins in and around PS Now. That gamers could, you know, try before they buy. But back then, there was a significant pushback from creators and publishers.
So the interesting thing is, if they can create a mechanism where the game developers don't have to create a demo package, which is obviously more work, i.e. PlayStation has a timer and that the game gets deleted off the console.
That's exactly how it works.
Yeah, okay, great.
Developers don't have to do anything apparently, but PlayStation does the work and it's probably, it's a counter. Mm. It's a 2-hour counter from the time they start the game rather than from the time they download the game. It's kind of like, it's an interesting way. I mean, they're really forcing the issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I remember in Destiny 2, like the first campaign had like parts of the campaign that made you think it had fit the persistent features of the game that didn't disappear.
I mean, all this could change, really. Sony, they own the service. They'll obviously collect the data they need to say, is it worth doing? I just think, on the face of it, game trolls, what we used to call game demos, is pretty consumer-friendly. You know, why not try before you buy?
It feels like Sony is shoehorning a feature to justify the higher price versus having anything really substantial.
I don't like the tiers myself, but, you know, we'll get into that. But, yeah, I mean, I do think having games trials at that tier seems a bit weird, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, it should be open to all of them, really.
Yeah, I kind of, you know, felt that was a... that you should have played that a little bit differently, but again, the service can change. You know, it will be about competition at the end of the day. But as you said, it feels like some of these things should be open to all the tiers, but I just think they've got one too many tiers.
Probably, yeah.
Three tiers, difficult to understand.
What's the price difference?
Oh, it's very complicated.
But it's one too many tiers, in my view. Mm. It's whatever they feel they can get away with. You know, we'll have to watch this space and see what happens. But obviously, they've absolutely confirmed it won't offer, you know, day-on-date first-party games. However, in an interview, they're not really shutting the door on that. They just said not now. Now, I don't ever think they will do an Xbox and say every first party game that we produce on Game Pass. Mm. I still maintain they're not big enough as a company to absorb that sort of cost.
It's quite crazy to do that, especially when there's enough hype around certain games.
They're not big enough. I mean, they're not a trillion-dollar company like a Microsoft is.
I also, without going off on a tangent, I don't think we've really seen the impact on game design off the back of Microsoft having Game Pass with their first-party games on. I suspect they are going to lean towards more games as a service.
Potentially.
And with Sony, with their first-party single-player games that have been very successful, it would break that model as well. So, you know, I was a bit frustrated that PlayStation didn't add that, but I can also see how it can impact game design. And then that's one thing I don't want. I want both companies to experiment and come up with new features and evolve game design, not break it.
But if you imagine that the financials involved in a service like Game Pass, not necessarily Game Pass, but a service like it, could mean that you have to shorten games and provide less content, because the bottom line tells you that it's just too damn expensive to make them, all right, like that. And the only way I'm going to get my money back is to provide shorter, more episodic content.
It will be, yeah. No, that's exactly. So, for example, let's just take, I think, Forza Motorsport 8 is the next one, and you've got Gran Turismo. I can imagine them bleeding all of the cars released over multi-years on Xbox to just to keep that, and they even bleed out all the tracks. I mean, I'll actually go far.
They're going to do it, right? Microtransactions.
They'll have to.
Not even just that, Al. That's going to happen regardless, right? Because you know that model exists already. But it's like companies will start saying, "I don't want to risk investing all this money into this game. I have to basically release a limited version of my vision, because I can't spend that sort of money because the returns aren't there anymore."
Yeah, and if it ends up being a flop, right? So why put yourself through all that risk?
There's a risk or reward. All of it. What's your return on investment? You know, some gamers listening to is going to shut the F up. You know what I mean? But that's the reality, guys. That's the reality, right? We're dealing with multi-million, multi-billion, and in some cases, multi-trillion companies here. How do you think they got there? They're not charities, so, you know. This is the looming threat of maybe a service like this as well. Because for every good thing that's on Netflix, there's probably about 5 or 10 horrible pieces of content.
I would say 80-20, 20% reasonably good stuff, with and then that 20%, 5% is good. As in a quarter, and the rest is junk. And I think it has the potential to have exciting, more experimental game design in Xbox, right? Given their culture, I think they can promote that. And I think a game is fine if it's small, but as long as it's taking risks. If it's the same game as the previous one, they've just artificially stretched it out, I think all gamers will get very frustrated by that. One point I wanted to make, right, is amongst all this transition to games subscription service, managing your studios effectively is absolutely critical.
And we're going to talk about that.
Okay, great. Okay, Sony are much stronger than
that.
It's
a big factor, actually, and we're seeing that right now. It's a big factor.
Mm.
Getting back to what Sony's plan is, that the fact they've got, I think, you know, one too many tiers, right? You know, we talked on day and date, but really, we still haven't got local PS3 emulation. But there are rumours now they're working on it.
I heard that as well, yeah.
It's actually quite interesting, because I do think, right, that whether we have local PS3 emulation or not, it's not for everybody. It's just for people like us. We're in love with our games and like technology. It's not going to be for the masses.
But don't you think that that's the driving force between the tiers on Sony's current tiering system? And the people who are going to subscribe to these services are the hardcore gamers initially. So it is important.
It's not because of the numbers necessarily, if you know what I mean. Because the numbers will mostly be on the PS Plus side, then the middle tier, and then obviously the real hardcore, the people who like kind of retro games and the history of games and whatnot and have had a long experience. That's where they all want to sit. But let's get back to the interesting part of this conversation, which is like, there could be a local PS3 emulator. But what I heard recently, and I think it was on Sacred Symbols, is that PS3 games employed really different techniques to get around the limitations of, let's say, you know, the Cell processor. And we know that because it was horribly difficult to kind of develop for. The GPU on the PS3 was actually comparably low powered. So they had to find a way to redress the balance, if you like. You know, as an example, there's one specific anti-aliasing technique called MSAA, and actually did that by distributing workload across all the cells cores or their SPUs. They did really kind of specific things like that, custom things like that, to get more out of the PS3 architecture. So what they said that was quite interesting, which made perfect sense to me, is that the emulator has to work almost as many different emulators, dealing with the different techniques that maybe kind of specific engines applied. And that's one of the reasons why it's been so difficult to get an emulator out. And you know, there is a PC emulator out there, right? And it's doing a reasonable job. The thing is, with that emulator, you need the highest tier of consumer PC to run it well. Right, and people, the way they basically tune that thing, right, is they actually have to switch off stuff like MSAA because it's so kind of intensive. So it definitely is a challenge. The more I kind of hear about what's having to be done, it definitely is a challenge. The techniques employed are very kind of like custom. They also go against the grain of how we typically develop games now, because everything's on the GPU. It's not on the CPU. We don't do that sort of stuff on the CPU. This is something to consider. But that's exciting, I think. If they got that up to the highest tier, I'd be excited by that. But I'm a geek, so...
I'm just thinking it must have been hell for PS3 developers.
Yeah, but look at the results, you know? It was hell, but I mean, look at the results, yeah. The other thing that I would call out is that the way that the backwards compatibility works right now is you can't really play your retro game collection from the disc. You just can't. On the PS5, one of the reasons you can't is that you can't even read the disc.
So there's a hardware limitation.
So you can't even do it.
But that was probably for anti-piracy reasons, right?
They just didn't build it into the unit, and it was probably cost considerations.
If their plan is to eventually have every single PS1, PS2, well, actually, in fact, I'll take that back. They're never going to have every game, are they? Because they won't have the licenses for every game. So that is a bit of a bummer, isn't it? Whereas Does Xbox own the license for every single game published? No, so they're the same challenge.
It's just
right?
that they must have been based on at least a Windows form factor before. So they probably were a little bit easier to backward compatible.
I don't know if it is, Al, because they even have challenges with music licensing in game.
Yeah. I'm not talking about whether Microsoft are able to get every single game. I'm talking about whether they have the licensing to put it even on. And I think
they have to have a new agreement with whoever owns the rights to it.
All expensive stuff.
But if you've got the Xbox disc, can you play
on the Xbox? I believe you can. But then again, that's not every game. Yeah, on the PlayStation, no, because physically you can't. Yeah, I mean, what they should consider is, hell, we scan barcodes all of the time, right? Do something along those lines. Have it tied to your account once you do that. Because obviously, you know, when PlayStation 1 was around, PlayStation 2, there was no kind of like, you know, PSN. Not a good version of it anyway. It's not a real fix, really, but it's a way to get around that. And show a little bit more kind of respect to your, you know, to the consumers. The other thing that I'd say is notable by its absence is PS Vita. I'm thinking they may save that for a future iteration. Because I hope they do it, actually. Because there were some stellar things on PS Vita. But they can deliver it over time, so I do believe it will come. And it should. The PS Vita's challenge is, it's like we talked about PSVR, It's the physical aspects of that hardware. PS Vita had the back touchpad. It had the touchscreen. It had all these other controls, right? And that's where there's going to be a challenge. And that's where I think they've skipped it for now until they can find some solutions around this.
Yeah, a question I had was all of the tiering on PlayStation and all of the even the marketing on the Xbox side around the back catalog. How long do you think people will be really interested in playing older games before the people go, well, that's great. And then it becomes only, well, Xbox has the first party, so then really that's really what I want. Because that's when Sony's going to have a problem.
Depends on if there's enough new content to keep people busy. If there's not enough new content, people will go back to their back catalogue, their retro games, play a bit of that to keep themselves busy.
Yeah, I just somewhere think that the people that did had nostalgia from those games are much older and have far less time. And they like the romantic idea of having access to it. But will they really pay for it? And then will they really pay for it on a persistent period to actually have a subscription for a long period to warrant Sony and Xbox having it, the service? That's where Xbox shines because it's got the first parties day one going forward. And I think what I'm basically saying is I think PlayStation will be forced into a corner where they're going to have to put the first parties on there as well.
But not necessarily every first party game. I don't know that we'll do that. But look, to get back to your whole backwards compatibility question, I think it's a two-tiered question. Because I think, number one, right, there is a massive retro scene at the moment. People out there, young and old, who seem to want to play these retro games. And there's obviously, you know, connected to that, there's the game preservation slant, which is, you know, to my mind, kind of building a little bit more traction these days. I mean, it's not massive. You know, compared to you know everybody that plays games, but it exists. The other thing is this whole backwards compatibility, and with this old content, will technology one day get it to a point where it kind of looks okay on modern, you know, modern screens and modern technology? It gives it an extra set of legs. You know, it does not really place or substitute, let's say, day on day first party games, but there's definitely a kind of like group in the community who want this sort of thing. It's just good PR, if not anything else. There are people out there who are restoring old consoles, collecting old console games. They're building kind of emulation in with FPGAs and hardware. It's all real stuff, and I'm seeing it more and more. You know what I mean? So I guess it's like people kind of like buying vintage clothes or something, or wanting to dance the kind of seriously bad kind of 80s music.
Yeah, they went through the whole mini series and, you know, so
yeah.
It made good money.
Yeah.
And that nostalgia, people still hold on to. You know, I bought Mass Effect Remaster. I've touched it for maybe like an hour.
Well, let me put it this way. In a video streaming service, would you not expect to be able to watch old films?
Yep. It may be in rotation, maybe not all of them.
No, but you'd want some, right? People kind of talk about, you know, the greatest films of all time, you know, like Star Wars, Citizen Kane, It's a Wonderful Life. You know what I mean? There's an expectation.
It fills out the numbers as well, doesn't it? Yeah. And you can use all of the logos and stuff in marketing. So it's kind of the reality of how much people do play those retro games or actually watch those retro films. I think it's much lower than people probably think.
Absolutely. I totally agree with you. The power of saying you have it is disproportionate to the actual use of that content, I think.
Well, it's the same as even just having games in your library, even though we've not even played it.
Of course. Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, this is why I've said, you know, these sorts of game services may not be as valuable as, or practically valuable as you think. Giving all this shade about kind of like PlayStation's new service and their tiers, the reality is there's good value here because ultimately it gives you access, if the numbers are correct, to 740 games, and some of which obviously rotate in and out. It does offer game trials, which on the face of it seem consumer friendly. Again, the new PS Plus service, it appears, it's kind of safe, isn't it? I mean, it doesn't do anything that you wouldn't expect it to do, almost.
I'm still missing the price, because I can't, if without the price, I can't tell you if it's good value.
The price is out. What I did, like, I kind of broke it down. So, how did I compare it? So I said it would be better to compare Xbox Gold versus PS Plus Essential, or current day PS Plus. Because the reality, and I don't know why people not saying this, that is the comparison. That is the like-for-like service, not PS Plus versus Game Pass. We should compare Game Pass vs PS Plus Extra or PS Plus Premium. That's the comparison. Let's go through the list. Yeah, let's go through the information. So Xbox Gold, $6.99 a month. As much as I could see, there was no yearly charging model. Well, at least I couldn't find one. PS Plus Essential, or the current day PS Plus, is also $6.99. And it's effectively $49.99 for the year, which boils down to £4.20 per month when you basically do the math. So that gives you obviously multiplayer, two monthly free games, cloud saves, membership discounts. For PS Plus, they give you one additional thing, which is this PS collection, these 20 games or so. A small curated game collection, which is, you know, decent enough. Now, when you start comparing, let's say, Xbox Game Pass, and let's compare it to PS Plus Extra. So obviously, all the same things as Xbox Gold and PS Plus Essential. But let's say every one of those services gives you 100 plus games. PS Plus Extra, they give you a kind of a boundary and they say 400, but it's 100 plus. Xbox Game Pass gives you game streaming. PS Plus Extra does not. You get EA Pass with Xbox Game Pass. And you get day-on-day new releases with Xbox Game Pass. Cloud-enabled browser play, that's Xbox. But I think that's more about streaming and playing games on a web browser, that sort of thing. Both no PC games. I would say Xbox Game Pass gives you some retro games. Both don't give you this games trials feature. But really, you know, with 100 plus games, 400 games, you know, in many ways, kind of who cares, but you do get day on date with Game Pass as well. So that's kind of like one up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So the cost is $7.99 for Game Pass, $10.99 PS Plus Extra. Again, I couldn't see an annual charging model for Game Pass. For PS Plus Extra, that's about $83.99 or £6.99 a month. In my mind, it feels like there's a definite, well, not quite definite, there's a win here for Game Pass. You know, I think that's clear to me. When we get to the highest tier, you've got everything above. Xbox Game Pass has got 100 plus games, but for Xbox and PC, you'll get 740 games for PS Plus Premium, PC gaming for the Game Pass Ultimate, retro gaming's for both, and I would say game trials for PS Plus Premium. And what are the costs? £10.99 for Xbox Game Pass Ultimate, $13.49 for PS Plus Premium. Again, yearly or annual charging model, that's $99.99. That's about £8.33 per month. It's very comparable. I think the last tier is actually very, very comparable. And you might say the last tier, in terms of cost, is closer to Xbox Game Pass than you might think. They're comparable services. It's just how much do you want the day and day?
Yeah.
How much do you want that? So those are the numbers. That's the comparison. Now, so again, does PlayStation have a plan? Well, the armchair CEO now speaks. So obviously, there's more than two things. There's a number of things, I think. I think the new PS Plus has just got too many tiers. And I'm also thinking, does the standard PS Plus Essential, should it even exist? Because why not update it and put a bit more pressure on Xbox Gold? Or Game Pass, or whatever it may be. And I just felt it should have been two tiers. So you have your kind of standard PlayStation Plus, the same benefits as of today. $6.99 per month, but you get your monthly downloads, your discounts, your cloud storage, your online multiplayer access, which, to my mind, these things shouldn't even be a thing anymore, if you know what I mean. Yeah? But give people a new PS collection, but extend it to 100 games, and rotate that in and out. And by all means, have retro games in there, and have all those big hitters, those legacy or older big hitters you're talking about. Okay? And maybe for the premium tier, have all of that, but price at $11.99, let's say, 640 additional games, yeah, PS3 games as per usual, you know, all of that sort of good stuff, streaming if you really want that, okay, time limited game trials I've kind of left on this upper tier, but to be honest, you could have them on both tiers, have one locked at 2 hours and have another locked at between 3 to 4 hours or something, if you know what I mean. Yeah, to me that would have been a more compelling offering if you're not going to basically do day on day kind of releases and all that kind of stuff. But obviously they didn't do that, and I don't think it's bad, I just think it just feels like almost a little bit of a missed opportunity, or Sony are just treading very, very carefully, hearing on the side of caution, watching what happens, which is like what I think they've been doing lately. So
I mean, I've got some thoughts. I don't know, Jay, if you've got any specific thoughts on this one.
I personally am not going to subscribe to this. It's not strong enough for me.
But you'd still need the basic tier, not for for things like Destiny.
That's not subscribing to anything new, is it? And I've already got that. The games in the first tier up, the PlayStation Plus, I'm happy to just buy them because they're reasonably cheap now. And then going to the tier above, there isn't enough to really sway me. I mean, I like the idea of those retro games. I just don't think I will play many of them. But that's its current state now. I do think that they'll get forced into doing first party eventually, and then I would subscribe. But PlayStation have a lot of regular sales on a lot of those games. And as soon as those games are on... Well, this is an interesting thing. Those games that they have regular sales on, once they're on the higher tiers of PlayStation Plus, will they not have those sales? Probably. to push people towards it. But I just don't... I agree what's on the points before. Too many tiers is confusing. I don't think they're strong enough for people to subscribe to them, other than the hardest of hardcore. I feel like it's going to flop a little bit, like PlayStation Now has. But it won't. They won't. They've cleverly kept the name the same, so it won't look like a flop. So, but it will be a flop. And coming back to the ultimate question, which is, do they have a plan? They do have a plan, but for me, it's wrong. What their plan is, they're fundamentally going to lose, because any company that starts from we're ahead and we're going to try and preserve being ahead, you will always fail eventually, because all your decisions are going to be around protecting what you've already got.
It doesn't even involve day on day releases.
Where's the they bought Crunchyroll, you get access to some of the content there, or you get access to some of the Sony movies, or they've invested in Evo, and you get, you know, dare I say it, some NFTs or some new avatar stickers to put on your profile, or you get special back access to some of the interviews of some of the people.
I think they'll have one more
contenders. I don't know. It's just weak.
I just think that I just hope they've got a roadmap.
It's weak. I don't think
they need more tiers. I just think they need to bolster.
I don't think they have to. So I think I understand what they're trying to do here. Like, leaving PlayStation Plus alone, because they've got a huge number of people still on PlayStation 4. You know, just why would they offer anything extra in that existing current place? There's no real reason for them to do that, unless they're really trying to grab back some kind of market. But I don't think they have to.
It's not grabbing back market, Al. It's not losing it. That's the problem.
But they have there's no other reason to offer more. You know, Xbox may be offering really, really good value from a Xbox Game Pass perspective, but as we've been saying, I think if they put their kind of first party titles on there, that's actually going to be detrimental. They're going to lose so many sales.
Yeah.
And it just feels like they can't afford to do that.
Yeah, I don't feel they need to necessarily offer, let's say, day on day first party releases on there. I don't. I honestly think they could actually get away with maybe offering one or two of those titles a year, and that could be the offering, plus these other levers that that Jay's talked about, that we talked about in the past, because you know they're more than a games company. Sony, they've got a lot of different levers, but I just think this three-tier configuration is a little bit confusing. They don't have to offer day-in-date releases, but it just doesn't feel that they're putting enough pressure on their competition.
And if I think about it, they probably don't need that middle tier. But I do think there's a beyond this premium tier, because if you talk about all the stuff around Crunchyroll and other things, that movies, and we've been talking about it before, I think they have to charge more, fundamentally.
Essentially.
This feels like a wet fart. It's just a boring step forward. And their hand is going to get forced. I mean, Microsoft have failed. I mean, it might be done on purpose, but they've flopped on their first party releases for this year, so Redfall and Starfield. But if you look at what games will plan to come out in 2023, with those two big titles and their Game Pass offering, they are going to have every quarter one or two, at least one, big bangers coming out.
Yeah, but I don't know. It feels like it's a loss-making business. I don't know what they're actually doing with that. And why does Sony need to compete in a loss-making business? It just doesn't make any sense.
It won't be It won't be a loss-making business, will it? So Microsoft are also going for you buy one of those dongles to put into your TV, and more people have access to more games. I think they will have more of a push on the kind of the casual gamers as well.
They will need those numbers.
Yeah.
Because they're not going to get those numbers through the hardcore.
Mm.
No, exactly.
Tell you that. What Microsoft need at the end of the day is a number of people who use the service on a regular basis to turn it from a lost lead business to something that's profitable.
Mm.
That's a bit of a build-up. It's not going to come because they've absorbed the kind of PlayStation Nation or the Nintendo players. That's not going to happen. They need a bit more than that.
I haven't actually ever seen anything, someone running the numbers, that if you take an average of, let's say, 5 years, what's their attach rate of the actual games? If you took the cost of someone having a perpetual Game Pass license over 5 years, would they roughly pay the same amount, or would it be slightly more? I suspect it's probably quite a similar amount.
It's probably similar.
Yeah, and then but they're going for a wider audience with more channels of people getting access to it.
Yeah.
This is where Sony has a fail plan, because they're not going to make any bold moves. And
I think that's Sony's problem. They're not being very bold about this. Yeah, I mean, this is Jim Ryan's basically PlayStation, right? Because, you know, it's so weird. There's no big brash announcements.
I think we're also in this. I think they may have taken the right strategy. Maybe out of luck, though. Current climate of the world.
It slowed things down. I think we all agreed that, you know, pretty much they needed to do a little bit more.
Wet fart.
Yeah, it doesn't do enough, really. Even if they crunched it down to two tiers, right, they could have bolstered what those tiers had offered, and it would have been a little bit more kind of valuable, if you know what I mean. And, you know, PS Plus and, Xbox Gold right now, they're kind of dead offerings, because they're the kind of offerings you want people to move off.
I can imagine Xbox getting rid of Gold.
They tried to already.
Okay.
Yeah, they tried to, but upping the price, and gamers basically threw up their hands.
No, what I'm saying is, if they say right, it's all free at that level.
They haven't done it yet, because what they tried to do was up the cost of the thing to try and drop the numbers down. This is why I was thinking that PlayStation and Sony should just bolster the regular PS Plus right now to put them under a bit of pressure. In effect, this is our Xbox Gold, and it looks closer to Xbox Game Pass than it does anything else.
Microsoft could squeeze Sony more if they drop the Gold, give it free, and condense their Game Pass to one, that will shaft Sony, Loney.
They're not migrating anybody off that. They're trying to migrate them by decommissioning it. They're trying to make it a less desirable service and all of that sort of stuff.
Right, I see what you mean. Those Xbox Gold are ones that are using older hardware, but are still paying.
Yeah, why would you offer it? But that's what I said earlier. Yeah. Why would you change that? Why would you give them more? Why would you make it free? It just makes no sense. They're just milking anyone that's just still sticking on it.
Xbox Gold won't even actually be on the Microsoft website, so you can kind of discount that a little bit, can't you?
But no one in their right mind on a new...
Well, I know, but there's 100 million people, players who are still on it,
Gold, because they don't understand what Game Pass is.
I thought those were active users, weirdly enough, you know? I'm blown away by that number, but... I think the weird thing is, like, I actually might subscribe to the upper tier. And the reason I might do that is quite simple. I looked at the list and I thought, well, I haven't got some of these titles.
Mm.
So it might be actually all right for me to subscribe for the year. You know, I'm not in love with the service, but I kind of, you know, I'm looking at the numbers and I'm thinking, okay, that might be worth doing. But Jay, you're right in saying that really PlayStation have been really safe. Does PlayStation have a plan? Well, I hope they've got a roadmap, because there's all these levers they could pull over time. And I hope they're thinking like this, right? Because as you say, right, I'm not a believer that they want necessarily to do everything day on date releases, but I think they can do some things. But if they don't do that, then there's all these like other levers you can pull.
Would you be happy if their titles were 1 year old that they came to their top tier PlayStation Plus?
Yeah, I think because these days, and again, it just depends on your circumstance, yeah? I've got hundreds of games that I've not played. So, I'm the wrong person to ask, if you know what I mean.
Doesn't retro games add to that then? Why do you want that?
Yeah, of course, but it doesn't really matter. Retro game is a collector.
Collection. It's there.
Yeah, it's a collection.
If you want it, if I ever have time.
Whole collection, though, isn't it? As soon as you stop subscribing.
The people that need to be asked are obviously the hardcore PlayStation fans, but equally, they seem to will buy anything that Sony kind of chuck their way. So, you know, it's kind of like almost Sony having to straddle this line. We know you'll pay, but equally, we know if we basically don't offer this service, we might die. It's just stuff like that. But I think that's where I see them basically just observing, waiting. That's what I feel they're going to be doing. But what could their roadmap be? I mean, it's going to be, we know, first-party releases. It's too big a source of revenue. But they could offer one or two, let's say, a year. But they haven't said they wouldn't do this for third-party. They haven't said that. EA and Ubisoft, you know, offer services of their own. EA Play, Ubisoft Plus. You know, they could integrate that in the service if they wanted. And I think they've done that with Ubisoft already. I think that's just come out. And Sony want this whole 10 plus live service games by 2026. Think on this, guys. If day on date new releases is not in PlayStation's and Sony's bag, then if they want to be sticky and they want to kind of, let's say, develop services that are sticky, then what would you do? Yeah, how do you coax somebody to basically giving you their money every month? Because ultimately, that's what they want to do, right? I mean, all these companies, that's what they want to do.
An addictive free-to-play game.
Thank you. Yeah, so you can see some of the strategy formulating here. We can't basically offer you first party day on date, but you know what we could do? This other thing. I'm just thinking that comes in the thought process, whether it's good, bad or otherwise, because they want to retain the model they have because that makes them so much money. But how do we become sticky? They can be sticky without the kind of investment that Microsoft are necessarily making, because they can't afford to do that. They're not big enough. I keep saying they're not big enough. They're big, but they're not that big.
Can you quantify that? Because the Microsoft are big enough to buy the game studios.
It's like I would say there's enough funding for them to do this without worrying about the consequences. Whereas I think Sony do need to worry about those consequences. I don't think they could afford to just throw money at the problem right now to try and build that consumer base. They actually need to be making money off the back of it.
the narrative that you're saying is what a lot of people are saying, but I don't see the data that supports it. So, for example, if you're saying that Sony have a lead, they make X amount of revenue, and they wouldn't make the same amount of revenue by moving everything to day one on then that's fine, but that's the wrong way of looking at it. If you think about the competition is getting bigger and our position is going to get eroded over the next 5 years, and everything is going to go to a subscription anyway, and we know that, then taking a 5 or 10 year horizon, we're not going to sustain our model. We're going to lose it anyway, so we might as well just go head in heels now. So this is what I'm saying. No one's actually shown the numbers. 2 to 5 year, it makes sense what they're doing. Therefore, they're doing the right idea. But actually, 5, 10, 15,
you can't. I think that's the problem. Is that a lot of the numbers are actually hidden behind the scenes.
All we can do at the moment as spectators is speculate. And the reality is, let's just say, worst case scenario, right, for Sony, how much is it to develop a game, one of their big AAA titles, 200 million. So I guess we got to say, over the number of years, how many games pass, whatever service subscription numbers would you need to cover that cost? Quite substantial. Still, and let's say they did it with every single first party game, and remember the revenue will come, it will trickle in,
be a small portion, minor portion, it will trickle in all of that.
Yeah, you're not going to get the big bang you would get in, say, the first 3 months of a sale. That's not going to happen. It will trickle feed in potentially, so stuff like that's got to be taken into account. It's absolutely true. If Sony weren't to do something, or they weren't to try and establish a model where they could compete, they might be gone. That's the truth of the matter. But can they? Because either way, if they just basically change the strategy, and let's say if they did it overnight, hypothetically, they'll be out of business. It's just how can they absorb that cost? I don't know if they can. And without seeing numbers, obviously, no one really knows. For all we know, Game Pass is making a huge profit. But I find that so difficult to believe, you know. I think
I'm surprised no one's done it. You could take their Sony's yearly accounts, and they'll have their R&D numbers in there and the revenue numbers in there, and you can make an estimate on the number of games they have produced or going to produce, and work out the rough costs, what they will need to recuperate on their actual games as a service equivalent, and then extrapolate that over a 2, 5, 10 year time period. And I'll be surprised if they can't actually make back the same numbers. And
it was 7.15 billion for the quarter, right?
Right. But what I'm saying is, even if they said, right, we can't do it at the same price as Game Pass, but we can do day one for $15.99 with tiers of our first party releases up to £20 a month. And well, let's go full tilt on that. People might even pay.
I think Sony has those numbers behind the scenes, which is why they're not doing it. I think they know how they've worked it out. Again, with the Xbox one and the Microsoft one, depending on if they've got a lot of money investment to supplement all this, then your profit and loss, if they really want to calculate it, I think they would be making a loss. But, you know, again, I'm theorizing. I don't have it.
Yeah, I mean, we're all theorizing here. I mean, the other side to this is, what's it going to do to their share price? I mean, people do stupid stuff because of their share price. I mean, and the reality is, maybe they just don't like that model. That's the reality. It's like, it's not our strategy.
Yeah, it's like a Nintendo would like. So we mentioned that at the top of the topic was that Microsoft's credibility of hitting the ground running in this generation is starting to falter now, and all of that goodwill is going out the window.
Correct.
Given that they've delayed some of the first, but I think part of the equation for Microsoft is that they think Microsoft might drop the ball in managing their studios and releases. Yeah. So therefore, let them fall, and then maybe we don't even have to take anything up.
Basically, if they have a roadmap, then it gives them a bit more time to fulfill it. That's the other thing. It's just like, you know, the threat is lessened, and they could fulfill this 10 plus live services. And as we said, right, if any of those are amazing, live service games, that's potentially 2 billion a year per game, right? So
exactly. One last question I had was, because I've been getting into fighting games recently, and I've noticed that the good ones, especially for Arc Systems, are only on PlayStation, right? And I don't know if that's a Japanese thing, but could you imagine a world where the game studios that are left, who rely on sales, because everyone get on Microsoft Game Pass gets used to, oh, I'm only getting Game Pass, I'm not going to buy any third-party games. And those people on those consoles stick to that. Therefore, all of those third parties all shift towards PlayStation.
That's interesting, actually.
that could impact this landscape quite a bit as well, because Sony has got... We need to talk about hardcore gamer specialties, right? There are still a few niche games that are only PlayStation only.
That's not going to change in a while.
The behaviour patterns in this whole topic is massive.
It's quite interesting, I got to admit. I mean, let's close off the whole roadmap conversation and we'll get into the rest of this. I think, to me, Sony are going to go down the kind of live service route, because my own feeling about this live service route, it just allows them to continue on with what they're doing. And that's my sole reason for suggesting they want to do this.
Hmm.
They probably feel it will allow us to continue on with our AAA game model, but we'll make enough money. Ultimately, guys, it's not about really how they do it. They want billions rolling in. And however they do it is however they do it. I would also say this whole backwards compatibility thing, come on, it's about bloody time we can play our PS3 games with native emulation. It's turning into a bit of a kind of like a joke, isn't it, really? And, you know, also putting a system where, you know, if you own the game, you don't have to buy it again. Please.
That would be quite nice.
Yeah. And, you know, we know that PlayStation wouldn't be able, or 5 wouldn't be able to kind of play some of these older kind of games media, PS1, 2, kind of PSP, UMD, and Vita cards, obviously. But the other lever Jay's also touched upon, and we've touched upon in the past, is Sony, you've got film, TV, music services. They've got Crunchyroll and Funimation. They've got Sony film and music content. They've got Evo in gaming tournaments. And PlayStation Productions obviously has a universe of film and TV incoming. They've got Last of Us with Pedro Pascal and Bella Ramsey from Game of Thrones. They've got the Uncharted film has come out, but now they're talking about turning that into a franchise. Tom Holland and Mark Wahlberg. Ghost of Tsushima, they've got an action film directed by the guy who did John Wick. And they've got a Twisted Metal TV show with Anthony Mackie. God of War seems to be in negotiations with Prime Video. They got levers, right? But God knows if they're going to pull them or not. You know, and this is what they need to think about. Integration with PSVR, we talked about cross-media levers and, you know, what are Sony really going to do with VR? Not really sure yet, but there's something there.
They could have PlayStation VR games included, because it's not the same sort of competition.
They do right now. They do it. I've got a whole bunch of PSVR games that came free.
Mm.
The other thing that people are not really thinking about is, well, they are, but they're thinking about it in terms of why are these games going to PC, you know. Integration with PC and mobile ecosystems is going to happen. That's where numbers are. Come on, yeah. Seriously.
I mean, that's why I was thinking, like, when you're saying about PlayStation, I was like, all of this stuff is coming to PC. I don't care.
They just got to go where the money is, effectively. The PlayStation might be the first platform, but it won't be the only platform. Yeah, so...
I've got one last thing on this, right, which is... Is it the wrong thing to do to compare them? Is the question I'm asking. And the reason why I'm asking that is because fundamentally, I think the generation is realised, let's forget competing with them.
Yeah, remember we said earlier on, right?
We base it on
traditional dimensions that we measure the console wars, this mythical, weird console wars thing, right? Well, Sony, they've basically shown they're the kings of that model of doing business. There's a specific model. Microsoft have come out and they've said, I'm changing the rules of engagement. I sometimes don't even think they're on the same battlefield.
Mm. Yeah, I don't think they are. Anymore.
Yeah, I think that's what we're saying. And I would agree with it. I don't really know that they are. And ultimately, the longer this goes on for, I think really they'll kind of start diverging. I don't know. It feels that way to me. And I mean, sure, Sony will have a service, but I don't think they want to leave their model behind, if you know what I mean. I think they want to supplement it. whereas Xbox seem to want to leave the old model behind.
Well, I think they've got a little bit of no choice as
well. Yeah, there is that. But look, for all of that said, for all the looming threat of the Xbox and how they're going to conquer gaming, right? The reality is, recently, as in the last week or two, they've decided to trade places in terms of, let's say, positive or negative press. Xbox decides to kind of really stifle its own momentum. Maybe through through some fault of their own, you know, Xbox DRM issues resulting in an outage for 4 days or something, when actually no one could play any games. And I think online or offline, because the way that DRM worked, you know, on that particular platform. And then obviously we know that, you know, Starfield and Redfall have been delayed until the second half of 2023. And by the way, they said the first half of 2023, correct myself. But they said half. They didn't say quarter. They were very explicit about that. And Sony, okay, new PlayStation Plus games looked actually decent. There's some good games there. They decided to be a bit more consumer friendly and said, if you bought a classic game in the past, you don't need to buy it again. And you don't even need to register to PS Plus to play them on PS4 or PS5. But we're talking about digital games here, okay, just to be clear. And actually, Ben Studios recently tweeted that Siphon Filter, which is an old PS1 game that they're bringing out as part of the service, they're building trophies for it, or they have built trophies for it.
Yeah, I heard that today, actually, that the PS or the back catalogue will have trophies for a lot of those things. So
yeah, I mean, it doesn't particularly matter to me, but the fact that they're doing that is actually something. About Xbox, the whole model of Game Pass being a place to play is kind of based upon good games and, to a degree, good first-party games coming out on a regular basis. And I think, Jay, you mentioned it earlier, are Microsoft able to kind of manage these studios? Because, so far, the outlook for this year doesn't look good for them. I'm sure there's other things to play on the service, but it's like they're the big titles. I mean, that's the thing. It's a tough one, isn't it?
They're potentially going to have a show and have no release dates for the rest of the year.
That's an ugly look. But I mean, I'm not sure they're going to have no releases. But the thing is, the big titles, the things that people are thinking define Xbox now, it's kind of done a runner until next year.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that they have is that as they're shedding their new skin, they need new IPs and new identity. They can't afford to have the Cyberpunk flop. So, and I'm okay with that, to be honest. I mean, I'll let my Xbox sit there with not switching it on
for
another year.
Yeah.
I still think that's the problem with it,
you know what I mean? So, I don't know. It does feel they've got to do something about... I mean, because it's not the first time that people have kind of discussed whether, Xbox are really good at managing their first-party studios. I mean, I think this is the second or third time that this has come up.
Well, I think Starfield already had those problems before this anyway, so...
Yeah, potentially. That's for sure.
COVID excuses as well. Look at Halo.
Yeah, but that's not going great guns, is it?
No, that's what I'm saying. It is. There's no COVID excuse for that. It's Phil Spencer and his team would have been playing the regular demos of the working product versus seeing PowerPoints of this is how we're doing and massage the progress, and it still flopped.
Yeah. So basically, we have one company who has this high-value game service where you get day-on-date releases for AAA games, but has no AAA games. Then you've got another company who doesn't want to do day-on-date releases, who have an abundance of AAA games coming out. Yeah?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it is. So you know what that says, guys? Consolidation.
Yeah, it's... Nintendo are never going to go to a subscription model, are they? And if they can still be a competitor but not have the model, that gives Sony a window to kind of still play in the middle.
I think that's what they're doing. Are going to end up doing, in my kind of humble opinion.
Yeah,
you're right about Nintendo. We kind of talked about them. They're not really that interested.
I mean, they're playing with other things, and that's a completely separate topic. But
Yeah. And the reality is, it's like whether they'll be forced to or not. It just depends if people still want their content, and very much so, people still want their content.
They've got this far without having a robust online service. So, like a competitive Game Pass, get it?
No, it's not that, is it? Is it good? I don't know enough about it, but it doesn't look good.
What I'm trying to say is it's definitely not good. It's very minimal, but their games aren't really designed to leverage it. It's all more single player games, their IP, right? So and there's enough demand for that, and it's still geared towards the younger gamers, and that's not going to go away. And they have no competition in that space.
Exactly, they have
well.
No real competition in the portable handheld space. They've got their niche, and whether they want to extend beyond that arena is largely down to their own ambition. You know, I think they're probably doing extremely well in terms of profit. I mean, it can't be that expensive to manufacture a Switch now. It was legacy technology when it came out. But anyway, look, I think we've talked enough about, you know, Xbox versus PlayStation and the new services. I think it's really, you know, now time to, you know, end this kind of part of the podcast and move on.